Hey everybody, my name is Jesse Collings, and I want to tell you all about my show, the Gentlemen's Wrestling Podcast, here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. On the Gentlemen's Wrestling Podcast, we do a thorough analysis on the biggest issues and trends within the pro wrestling industry. We talk a lot about pro wrestling media, we talk a lot about fan culture and wrestling's place within general pop culture, and we talk about the broader influences that are shaping the way we discuss and analyze the pro wrestling industry. We've had some of the brightest minds in the pro wrestling intelligentsia on the show, including WrestleNomics host Brandon Thurston, both Rich Kreich and Joe Lanza from the Flagship Wrestling Podcast, Trevor Dame from the Through the Years podcast, and a whole lot more. This isn't a show for hot takes. It's not a show recapping the latest episode of television. This is a show focusing on the biggest topics in pro wrestling and doing a deep dive on the real stories behind the surface level analysis you might find elsewhere. The Gentlemen's Wrestling Podcast is available wherever you get your podcasts, and we'd really appreciate it if you gave us a try. Thanks.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Hello everybody and welcome to the Super J Cast. I'm Joel. I'm back, joined this time not by Damon, but joined by the co-host of Voices of Wrestling flagship podcast, Rich Kreich. Rich, thank you very much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm trying to remember if we've ever actually done audio together, and I'm sure we have. I feel like it's impossible that we didn't, but I'm struggling with how long it's been or if we ever did do it.
I'm sure we have on...
We had to have, right?
Yeah.
I was racking my brain all day trying to figure it out. But hey, you know what? Who cares? We're here now.
Right. No, it must have been on John Carroll's end of year New Japan.
Oh, that's right. Okay. That makes sense. That makes sense. So never a solo show. Never where we were able to kind of spread our wings in the way that we want, I guess.
No, back in the glory days when multiple people wanted to talk about New Japan pro wrestling.
Hey, we did a book. Remember that? We used to do a book about that. Hey, I'd be coming on the show usually and plugging the book coming out. But
we're not doing the book this year.
No, believe it or not. Well, hopefully not.
Oh, I have to delete all my notes then.
Yeah. Well, you can. Hey, you know what? You do you, man. If you want to do
I've
a book,
profiles for everyone.
You know, I can give you all the setup. I can let you know it's all yours if you want to take the mantle.
Metallica Junior one that's going in the bin. Nope.
Yeah. All right. No. Too late. Next year, though. Right. Well, better for next year. No, I don't know about next year.
It is Friday, 8th of December, 2023. This is episode 287. So, obviously, me and Damon have been on hiatus for a bit. So, I want to say massive, massive thank you to all the people who filled in, to Booze and Curtis, Elliot and John, who did the Super World Dad League, as I like to call them, and Lawrence and Evelyn, who did a tremendous job as well. So, excellent. Outstanding job by them and giving us a much needed break at this time of year because it's a really busy time for all of us. But
absolutely,
what
they always do a great
here?
Job, by the way. That's one of the best things that you guys do, I think. Not that I don't like you and Damon, but I love the idea of bringing in guests. And then I always listen, and everyone's good. Everyone that you bring on is like really, really good. And they all kind of, because it's always kind of, you know, I'm always a little worried when you're like, all right, we're doing like the yearly thing with the tag league where we're just going to have random people do the show. And I'm always like, all right, yeah, we'll see. And then everyone's really good. And I'm always like blown away by how good everybody is that fills in. So yeah, they all do a tremendous job. And it definitely makes for a very fun month, I think, for the Super J Cast. So I've always appreciated it, always enjoyed it.
Yeah, well, it's a little bit disconcerting for me because sometimes the praise that we get in the feedback is a little bit too generous for my liking. They're like,
yeah,
wow,
it's
so
like,
great.
Hey, these
very refreshing
good.
To hear people who are not down on the product. I'm like, okay, come on.
Right.
So, yeah, here we are. I mean, why are we here? What are you and I doing here talking about World Tag League on a podcast? Why has this happened?
You tell me, brother. I don't know. What happened was my hubris got the best of me, and I was jacking around on a episode of the Flagship saying that I was going to lock in for the World Tag League and fill in, be one of the people on your fill-in gimmick and fill in for the month of December. And then you called me on it, and we're like, no, I'm holding you to it. I'm holding you to it. I was like, no, it was just kind of saying I didn't really mean it. But you held me to it. And here we are. It took a little while, unfortunately, because of scheduling. And there was a couple times we wanted to jump in throughout the last week or so, the last couple of weeks. But for scheduling purposes, it didn't quite work out. But I think this actually does work out in a way, because now we're looking at, the semifinals. We have the finals locked in. And I think, we can probably do some big picture stuff, too, because we are really, really close to the Tokyo Dome. We're, two shows away, I think, at this point. I think we have the two Road to Tokyo Dome shows, and I think we're there afterwards. So there you go.
Yeah, to be honest, this is not the sort of mutually assured World Tag League annihilation I was hoping for. I wanted us to do, proper, night eight, arse end of nowhere, dog shit cards, House of Torture in the main event, and actually doing an interesting big picture New Japan discussion that people would enjoy listening to was not what I had in mind, to be honest.
Yeah, no. Our initial plan was, let's find the worst. So initially when I like I said, I kind of was like, oh, maybe I'll host one of the JKS ones. You were like, I got you. You're in. And then I was trying to look, before the league actually started, before we actually had all the cards and stuff, it was like, let's find the worst night possible. And that's the one we're going to review and we're going to talk about. And then when they started to release the names and release the cards, we were kind of like, oh, hold on a minute. Maybe this is going to be a pretty good league. It looks like there's a lot of really good matches and a lot of good matchups or whatnot. So then we switched to, okay, let's just find a good show to do. And then, like I said, because of scheduling and whatnot, we weren't really able to do that. But our initial plan of finding the most dog shit night did not work out. But I was trying to look at what I think the worst night of all of them were. And I think there's a couple contenders, unfortunately, but I think all in all, it was a pretty decent tag league. I can't say that I loved it, but I definitely didn't hate it. There's certain years where I'm like, screw this. I hate this. I never want to watch this again. And it's like the worst, just gut punch to the end of the year for New Japan. But then everything comes back on and those Road to the Tokyo Dome shows usually. And then Wrestle Kingdom's always awesome. So it's like, okay, we're back in, and New Year's Dash is always pretty fun. But there's been some years where it's just a slog. This wasn't a slog this year, but it wasn't. I can't call it great. I don't think it was a great tag league, but I'll take a good tag league over whatever we've had, and some very recently as well. Some really just truly awful tag leagues.
So, we are here to talk about New Japan Pro Wrestling. And, I have to be honest here. I've been bottling this up for quite a while. I suspect you might feel the same way, as we both, at one point in the past, really loved this weird fake Japanese fighting product, all its cool characters, its great storytelling, awesome fights. But I don't know, Rich, to me, it's undeniable that the recent output has been really, really poor. It's a massive downgrade from the glory years. And as much as I want to defend this product that used to be so brilliant, it's a shell of its former self. All the best characters are gone. What's left is, it's a sad joke playing out in front of a dwindling and increasingly deranged fan base. Long-term storytelling, it's all over the place, deeply unsatisfying to me. Fights aren't anywhere near as dramatic and technical as they used to be. English language offerings are an embarrassment. It's disrespectful of the fan base's time quite often. The guy writing it all has lost his touch, refuses to come to terms with it, not to mention all the financial mismanagement behind the scenes. And I genuinely don't think I'm exaggerating when I say I really think we're circling the drain. This is the end of days. And I'd be shocked if the product keeps going this year. And it really breaks my heart to say that because, I've put so much time and love into it, but I can recognize a sunk cost fallacy when I see one. And to be honest, the only real pleasure I've got from it lately is reliving the older content and doing things like collecting the virtual fighter toys and playing Space... Hold on. Now, apologies, Rich. I've muddled up my notes. I've accidentally been reading my analysis of Shenmue 3.
Oh, I was going to say, go off, King. Go. I love it. Let's go. But that is honestly, as you were, it in some ways it works for both, but certainly does work for Shenmue 3. That is a very rough game. And if people do not know, we are both massive Shenmue fans, and that really kind of brought us together in the early days of the website, in the early days of the JCast and all that sort of stuff. But it is... before we get to New Japan, it is time for us to talk about Shenmue, and honestly, we should probably just talk about Shenmue all the way. But what a setup! You had me going. I was like, wow, they're not going to like this one, Joel. You're going to get a lot of people upset in the Discord and in the DMs and on Twitter or whatnot. But no, it was good stuff. Yeah, but Shenmue 3 is terrible. Yeah, it's Shenmue's pretty terrible at this point. And it's also now making me question if the original was good. And I know it is, and I know it's good, and I know it's fine. But it's getting rougher and rougher to defend. There's not many of us left anymore. Very, I guess, similar to New Japan in a lot of ways. There's not a whole lot of us left that are still dyed in the wool. No, Shenmue is actually good, because the mounting evidence that maybe it is not good has reared its ugly head, unfortunately, in the last couple of years. So yeah, Shenmue 3 is a disaster, and I think I kickstarted it in like what? When did they do that Kickstarter? I definitely did it.
Christ, that would have been.
So long ago, like, so when Kickstarter was a thing, back when you knew what Kickstarter was, and then people used Kickstarter all the time, like whenever that was, it had to be 12, 13, somewhere in there. I think I put some ungodly amount of money on it because I was like, yes, and did not get the reward that I feel like I should have gotten. But it was a good throwback game, I guess, if you want to go back to the days of 2001.
I've made my peace with the earlier Shenmues. I would never try and convince a casual that it's a good game, because it's not. It's objectively a bad game, but I like it. It's the same defense that I'd use for talking about House of Torture, for example. Just, yeah, I know it's shit, but I like it, so fuck off. So that's my angle when it comes to Shenmue, because I don't think it holds up to any real scrutiny in terms of game mechanics. Like, when large parts of the game are like, this tattoo parlor is closed. Now you need to wait 48 hours for it to be open again.
Right. Yeah, I'm trying. All the people that I know that played Shenmue at the time, or went back to it very, you know, around the time when it came out for Dreamcast or whatever, all still like it and go back to it and play it or whatever. And then I know when 3 came out, and the big thing was they came out with that pack of Shenmue 1 and 2, and I forget the price. It was very, very cheap. On you know, I think it was on Xbox and PlayStation. They had the combo pack, so I bought it and, you know, recommended it to a bunch of people as well. I was like, hey, I've always told you about the Shenmue games, but they've always kind of been hard to get if you didn't have a Dreamcast or whatever. And I said, here you go. You can play them. They're really good or whatever. And the feedback I got from all my friends were like, what the fuck is this game? This is so bad. But then, like, I was like, no, it's not. I'm like, it's good. And then I went and replayed it just to make sure. And I'm like, no, it's great. And they're like, nah, it's bad. And then, like you said, I think it's if you know, you know. And if you don't know, you're never going to know. And that's fine. That's okay. We just have to accept that we're a dwindling group of people that still know and still love it. But it is very hard to put the controller in the hand of somebody and say, all right, do 6 hours of remedial, you know, warehousing tasks. And they're going to say, why? And you're going to say, I don't know. I can't really tell you. But
it is the best bit.
It's so good. I do like that it's become a meme in a lot of ways. I guess that a badge of honor is that people love laughing and making fun of it too, which was great. But hey, if you were alive then, it was a revolutionary game. I'm telling you guys, revolutionary at the time. And you know what? It's the Christmas season. That's a Christmas game. That's like the best Christmas game ever. I'm going to go back and play that thing in the next couple weeks. It's great because I got it for Christmas. I played it. It takes place around Christmas. There's the Santa Claus you can go talk to who never has anything interesting to say ever. Has nothing to do with anything, but he's there. There's decorations. I got it. That's to really get into the season, I got to play Shenmue again. It's settled. There it is.
Yeah, Luis writes in and says, do either of you load up and play through Shenmue just to see Santa-chan? And yeah, it is. It's a festive game. It's a Christmas game for me. And I think you have to sort of embrace the charm and the love that went into it, because a lot of people compare it unfavorably to the Yakuza game. But in Yakuza, like, every single crevice, every nook and cranny of the world that they've built is filled with action and content and mini games and things you can do. But in Shenmue, they didn't do that. They built areas and places. Like, I don't know, case in point, the pizza parlor. The storyline never requires you to go in there. When you go in there, you can't do anything in there.
No.
There's just a music that goes, let's all have some pizza. And there's an Italian chef who speaks with a comedic Italian accent. And
yes,
they're doing this little animation of a pizza. Absolutely no reason why you go in there. But because you can, I just find that incredibly charming.
Right. And again, like, you got to take yourself back into 2001 or whatever, and or the year 2001, like, that these types of games, like, now we're spoiled. Every game is an open world game. Every single video game you play is this gigantic open world. It's massive beyond any recognition. And like you said, everything's happening. There's something happening every step of the way. You do something, something's happening. You do something. Oh, here's something to hunt or someone to talk to or something that, you know, every open world game has just got something happening, a fight that can happen, an action that can happen. You can engage this mini game. You can engage this quest. You can do that. At this time, just being able to walk around a world, a 3D world, and open drawers. I don't know why it was exciting, but goddamn it, opening those drawers. It was the rush of adrenaline you had the first time. You're like, hold on a minute. Let's see. No, it's just a notebook. But hey, that's pretty cool. And then you close the drawer and you open the next drawer and it's nothing. And you're like, oh, okay. And then he would say stuff and you go, no, nothing here. And you're like, oh, this is incredible. This game is amazing. How'd they do this? It's you had to be there. If you weren't there, I don't know what to tell you. You had to be there.
Yeah, it captures that sort of quiet but comforting mundanity of everyday life. And yeah, doing
that's
those
why it's a great
things.
Christmas game too. Like I remember playing it on Christmas Day when I got it and it was like snowing outside. And this was like one of the first years that we didn't have to go anywhere for Christmas. Like a lot of times we would open our gifts and get rushed up and like, you know, change clothes and drive and then go do. Yeah. This is one of the first years where they were just like, you know what? We're just going to hang out here. We're not going to go see anybody. I remember plopping down, putting that game in, it's snowing outside, I have nothing to do, and I'm like, this is all I'm going to do all day. This is incredible. It's a peaceful game in a lot of ways. Very, very peaceful.
Yeah, absolutely.
Boring. So, some people might say boring, but screw those people. Peaceful is what I go with.
Yeah, definitely. When you sort of crack onto the forklift truck bit and you do about 2 weeks of hard manual labor, really repetitive, take the crates from here to here, and that is literally it. It's a hard sell for casuals, but real ones, no.
You know, fuck the casuals. That's what I say about a lot of wrestling. And you know, when people say, "Oh, well, what about the casual fan?" I always say, "Fuck the casuals." That's what I'm saying with Shenmue too. Fuck them.
Yeah, and I'll very much say the same thing for fans of New Japan Pro Wrestling because I appear to have run off the entire audience of New Japan. So half the people think that I'm a New Japan shill. The other half think I'm constantly burying it and I'm a miserable bastard. So this is going to be
doing
a
good then. No, that's how you know you've made it. Trust me, if someone who has done all those ebbs and flows with every single wrestling promotion and half the people think we're paid shills and half the people think we hate it and we suck and we love the other companies, you've made it. That is how you know you got something that people care about and people listen to and you're passionate about your takes, is that half the people hate you and half the people love you. That is, you've made it. That's it.
Yeah, and it would be good to be doing that on terms of New Japan Pro Wrestling and not having to do it through the medium of low effort AEW bait on Twitter, because I'm not proud of that, even though it is extremely fun.
You got to do it sometimes.
I'm not going to stop doing it.
It's a cottage industry, so you know you might as well get the getting while it's good. So go for it.
Well, yeah, I mean, I was going to say, I don't think anyone wants to hear my opinions on New Japan Pro Wrestling because I've burned everyone out on that. But I think this is going to be a really refreshing chance to pick your brains as not a casual fan, but someone who has not been in the mud as much as the rest of us Shin Nihon freaks. What are your general thoughts on New Japan in 2023?
Yeah, it's a mixed bag because there's a lot of stuff that I think I've really liked about New Japan in 2023. And I think the biggest thing is that finally the influx of young wrestlers has come. And that's something they were well overdue for years and years and years. And it was like, they were kind of always tiptoeing around these guys or, you know, it was kind of, we were in need of a big reset in terms of getting younger wrestlers, getting them into this company and treating them like they're going to be the next wave. That next wave has to come. And that's kind of a problem that I think, you know, I don't know if the pandemic sort of stretched it out or whatever, but 2021 and 2022 was very much to me felt like, well, here's these guys. You remember them. They were all really good. And it's like, yeah. No, like I have no problem with, you know, Okada and Naito and Tanahashi. And these guys are great. And they're top tier wrestlers and they're, you know, some of the best to ever do it. But you got to get ready for this next wave because these guys are getting slower and slower. And we saw that with Tanahashi, you know, watching it with our eyes of just like, oh no, this guy is really slowing down really, really fast. Naito to a lesser extent, but you can see it a little bit in him. And I think you're starting to see it a little bit with Okada as well. I mean, I know that he was declared dead in like, what was it, 2019 or whatever, where he was declared that his back was done and he will never wrestle ever again. Yeah. Like
he's cooked.
It turns out that wrestlers sometimes, and Tanahashi is very guilty of this in numerous times as well, sometimes wrestlers, Joel, will exaggerate how hurt they are and might not even be hurt at all, or might be hurt just a little bit and exaggerating that for effect to make fans believe that they're maybe hurt more. It's wild, and I hate it. You know, I liked my wrestling back in the day when it was on the up and up, but apparently this is the thing these guys are doing now. But you're starting to see it a little bit with Okada, and it was like, okay, you can see that the end is somewhat near with this group. Who's that next wave? Who's those next? And it didn't feel like they really wanted to go to that next wave, whether they were just weren't confident in those guys. Like you had Great Okan come and felt like, okay, here's the beginning of the Great Okan thing. And then he just kind of fluttered around a little bit. And still is kind of just fluttering around a little bit. And then you had a few other guys come and go. I mean, the Yo and Show thing, I don't think anybody expected those guys to be like, you know, top tier main eventers or whatever. But, you know, it also kind of felt like, all right, those guys came and went, and then now they're just kind of doing their own thing, and they're kind of on their own little island and whatnot. And it was like, okay, we're really due for like the next wave to come, like the next wave of main eventers, the next wave that you guys are going to push as top tier guys. And I think we are, hopefully, and 2023 did signify to me that we are getting in that direction a little bit. Now, we'll talk about Wrestle Kingdom here in a little bit in terms of maybe not going far enough in that direction. But Yotsusugi came in and was an instant sensation. It was like, yeah, that dude's got it. And he reinvigorated a lot of New Japan for me, because that's my favorite things about, you know, any form of wrestling, is that next wave coming in, the next group coming in, the next guys, you know, moving up the ladder and becoming stars or whatever. That is stuff that I absolutely love. And you saw it immediately with Yotsusugi. You're like, that dude is a star. Here we go. We're off to the races. That, you know, he comes out, he's immediately in the main event, immediately getting huge crowd reactions. Loved it. So that is a great direction. Shota Umino, and I've made my, you know, thoughts about Shota pretty clear on the flagship for years, that I wanted a little bit more out of that guy and I wasn't quite getting it. We're getting it now. So I've eaten my crow. I've made my apologies, whatever terms you want to use. I'm well aware now, you know, where we are with with Shota Umino. He's clearly a dude. That guy is going to be a main eventer. The Ospreay match is one of my favorite matches of the entire year. That guy has moved up the ladder. Ren Narita,
crying selfies notwithstanding.
Yeah, that's a little weird. I don't know. That might not be the best idea, but hey, you know what? It happened. It sold the angle. The angle was pretty cool as well. Ren Narita, I'm TBD on Ren Narita. I know you're a House of Torture guy. I'm one of those people that you said that just fucking cannot stand House of Torture and hates it. But I think that there is a potential there for Ren Narita. He needed something. You know what I mean? He was definitely the guy who needed a little bit out of that new crew, needed a little bit of extra, you know, love and care. So that part has got me excited. I'm like, okay, here we go. We got guys that are here in Umino and Tsuji in particular that are going to be main eventers, that can be that next wave, that can be those next guys. Yuya Uemura is coming back. Like, that had me excited too, because I think he's got a ton of potential. And now, as we're kind of coming into the end of the year, I don't want to say we're limping into the end of the year, but I think my intrigue of New Japan is a lot lower than it was even a couple months ago, where it felt like, all right, all these new guys are ready to take that leap up. And now we're going to look at the Wrestle Kingdom show. We're looking at World Tag League. We're looking at these sort of things. And I want a little bit more out of those young guys. I want them to be pushed a little bit more. I want New Japan to be very deliberate in the idea that these guys are now the next wave. These guys are the new thing. And I know that, you know, it's you got to crawl before you can walk. And Gato and New Japan in particular take a while to tell stories. But I'm staring down the barrel at the end of this generation coming a lot quicker than I think a lot of other people are. And my worry is that these guys are not going to get ready in enough time, and that we're going to have a very weird period here where there's kind of the main eventers are just kind of the same guys or the broken down guys, and these young dudes aren't ready to really take that leap up and step up. And that's a little bit of my concern. I don't know if you kind of share that, but I feel like we're limping towards the end of 2023 after it felt like a couple months ago we were kind of turning the corner in building up this next generation.
Yeah, by and large, I agree. I think when New Japan was at its peak, sort of around 2017, 2018, when you had those guys on top, like Okada, Naito, Tanahashi, Kenny Omega, there wasn't that next generation of young Japanese heavyweight talent that you could point to and say, yeah, these are going to be the next guys. You know, you have guys like Evil, Sanada, but I don't think many people were saying, like, yes, you can hang your hat on these guys, flying the flag for the company for the future. But now they have done a really good job restocking the dojo with blue chip prospects who I think are capable of main eventing and leading the company. But the problem is, for me at least, the conservative nature of New Japan booking, that they do like to take their time with these things, and you very rarely get the pure rocket strap push that I might like for some of these guys. I mean, you could argue whether or not Tsuji got that, but again, looking where these guys are at the end of the year, to me, that progress is frustratingly slow.
Right. And he was there, and it felt like we were there with him. And I was like, here we go, baby. This is one of these guys. And now he's just kind of, he's kind of limping into the end of the year. And it's like, oh, man, all right. Like, we're not back at square one with him. Obviously, he proved he can be a main eventer. But I thought he was like, boom, we're here, and he's there. And I don't know that I feel that same way a couple of months later, even though I have all the confidence in his talents and his abilities and the fact that he's going to be a future main eventer. But yeah, like, he felt like the guy that they were putting that rocket pack on. Like, the rocket pack was fucking on him. And now it feels like it's not. And that's a little not concerning, but a little, you know, disappointing, I guess, is probably the right word.
Yeah. And I think in previous years, New Japan could get away with taking their time with those sort of slow builds for the young guys because they had such an outstanding main event talent at the top to be able to keep fans interested. But I'm not sure they have the luxury of taking such a slow burn with these guys when you've got guys like Sanada and Tama Tonga, you know, filling out the top end of your card. Those are some of the feature programs at the top of Wrestle Kingdom. And I just, a lot of the Wrestle Kingdom booking, which we'll come on to, is just me sort of gesticulating wildly at the card saying they ain't him. So that's my problem, really. I think the guys that are being pushed and elevated this year don't, to me, are not exciting. I mean, what do you see as the biggest weaknesses? Like, what would you change in 2024 if you had the book?
Yeah, I mean, I hate to do this to Sonata, but like this guy, he's nowhere near my world title picture. You know, and guy looks great in a suit, and I was excited at the early 2023, you know, that we had the, you know, just five guys and kind of the rebrand and that sort of stuff. There was a lot of exciting stuff, but the same Sonata kind of reared its ugly head. And for people that watched him in Wrestle One and people that watched, you know, his entire career, it's kind of just the same guy. And it's like, you used the term a little bit earlier, this guy just ain't it. I just don't think he's a main event level talent. He just doesn't get me excited. And I don't think he gets a lot of other people excited as being a top tier main eventer. So yeah, for me, it's like after Wrestle Kingdom, where I assume that he loses to Naito, I think I push Sonata back to, you know, just kind of the middle. I don't know that he's a guy that I go back to or that I circle as, okay, we have this guy that we can do, you know, have in the world title picture moving forward. I feel like this has been his reign and it's been fine. Like it hasn't been a disaster in any way, shape or form, but there's just doesn't feel like there's much energy and it just doesn't feel like it's really it feels unbecoming to what, you know, New Japan's main event picture was for so many years. And it was kind of, you knew no matter what, IWGP World Heavyweight Title, IWGP Heavyweight Title, whatever the name was, you were going to get a spectacular match. No matter what, you were going to get 30 minutes, 40 minutes, and it was going to be awesome. And that was kind of the case for, hell, you can go back to, you know, you trace it all the way back to Tanahashi and Kojima and then Okada and you know, AJ Styles and then the Omega run. And then it's just like, you know, for so long, and then Ospreay and Shingo and Naito and all these guys, like, you always knew, shit, there's going to be an IWGP heavyweight title match. It's going to be great. And now you don't really, I don't know that I necessarily always think that with Sonata. I'm like, I don't know. It could be. I mean, it might be. And I think he's had good matches, but I don't know that he's had many great, great matches in this reign. And I think that kind of hurts a little bit because you can't point to New Japan as being the company where, hey, you know what? Whatever you think about it, in the main event, you're going to get a 40-minute, just spectacular, awesome, incredible match. Like, that hasn't really become the case.
Yeah, you know, there's no consensus Sonata match of the year count.
No, you know, it's like at the end of the year, it's like, yeah, we're going to do our match of the year for Voices Wrestling. And I mean, I'd be surprised if there's that many, you know, Sonata matches, you know, competing for the top 100 or the top 50. And I don't think there'd be any none in the top 10 and none probably in the top 25 either. So that's kind of like a concerning thing too, because it's like, shit, well, that used to be kind of the calling card of this company. The top of the card used to always be relied upon to be, you know, great, great. And that's probably one of the things I do. And more than anything, like, yeah, in 2024, I just think that next wave has to come in a little bit. And I think we've seen, I mean, how many times do we have to tell the Tama Tonga story again? You know, we're good. I think we're good. I think everyone's good. Tama Tonga. I can't imagine anybody on this earth that needs to, you know, have another Tama Tonga story told. I think I'm good. And, you know, in terms of, you know, Naito winning this IWGP World Heavyweight title and defeating Sonata, like, he wins, but then it's like, okay, what's next? You know, I think that's one of the things that I'm struggling with the most with New Japan Pro Wrestling is what's next, who's next, what's coming. And that, you know, used to always be a pretty cool thing about New Japan, is that you could kind of see months and years ahead of time. You could kind of plot out, all right, the next guy up is this guy and the next dude up is going to be this guy. And when this guy, like, you could really plot this thing out. It's like, you know, I'm fairly certain that Naito is going to beat Sonata and win the title at Wrestle Kingdom and do the roll call and do all that sort of stuff. But then, okay, what's next? You know, what's that next program? Who's the next guy? What are we doing after that? I don't know. I don't know that I'm really that interested in that. So I think it's just getting those next guys up. I think that's the top half of this roster has just been very samey for a very, very, very long time. And I think it is now finally time to kind of shake that up a little bit. And if it's telling people, hey, we're not renewing your contracts and, you know, pursue stuff otherwhere, go for it. But I think just anything, just getting pushed and making sure that Shota Umino and Yota Tsuji and Ren Narita and those guys are focal points throughout 2024 is what I would do more than anything.
Yeah, and I think you've highlighted on what my issue is with the Wrestle Kingdom card, that they're playing it very, very safe. And obviously the tickets are doing well. We're getting a lot of people who, I think it's just the Tokyo Dome regulars. We've got a lot of international travelers coming in to see the big show. And I think the prospect of Naito winning the title and doing the roll call at the end of the show is doing a lot of the heavy lifting when it comes to the ticket sales, because Sanada doesn't appear to be doing much promotion of this match. Very, very little buzz, you know, no interviews, no excitement, like nothing on the undercards that's making us think, oh, I can't wait to see this match. But yeah, as you said, what is the hook for the casual Dome viewer who's going to watch the show to come back and watch New Beginning? Is it just the prospect of the Naito reign? Is it, oh, come watch Naito defend the championship? Because I would have thought it would be, with tickets doing so well, that's kind of a free hit to take a few more risks and be a bit more bold with the booking and feature some of those younger guys, so that a person who's not really seen the likes of Tsuji or Shota Umino can see and think, wow, yeah, these guys are really good. I want to come back and see what they're up to next time. And I'm not saying that they'll be doing nothing on the Wrestle Kingdom card, but they're not in any featured matches as of yet, which is disappointing. And your mileage may vary on this, but the Wrestle Kingdom card, as it stands at the moment, is not particularly exciting to me.
It really isn't. Yeah, and that's it's very disappointing, too, because when we started, you know, the first couple matches, we had Danielson and Okada, and obviously Sonata and Naito, we knew was going to happen. And it was like, okay, and then we had, you know, Sabre and Tanahashi. These are all pretty good. And it's like, all right, yeah, that's fine. I'm kind of okay with all these. And then it just started, the new ones that came in, next one up was just kind of like, you know, all right, like, you know, Hiromu and Desperado is a match that I you know, it's going to be good. Like, I have no doubt that it's going to be good, but man, I've seen that. You know, like, what's, you know, I don't know that I need another chapter in this story. Some people might, and that's great, but like, I don't know that it's going to add a whole lot of, you know, to me it doesn't add a whole lot of intrigue to the card. I've seen the match, I know it's going to be good, but I'm not super excited about, you know, who wins or who loses and what's going to happen with the future of, like, it's a match in a vacuum that will be good, but like, what are the long-term ramifications of El Desperado beats Hiromu for the title? There really is not. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, okay, now Desperado has it, or Hiromu beats him, it's like, oh, okay, now Hiromu beat, you know, I'm just not that interested in that. And you know, you mentioned the main event. It's a lot of people doing their own headcanon, like you said, and that's good, and that's fine. I have no problem with that. But like, the hype of the main event is just the fact that if you are into LIJ and you're into Naito doing the roll call at Tokyo Dome and hopefully not being interrupted on the roll call, that's it. Like, that's your hook. And for people that maybe are not into LIJ or not into it that level, what's your hook there for that match? You know, it's like, Naito's going to probably win. And but like you said, I don't know, are they going to get silly and think, oh shit, well, you know, we sold all these tickets and hey, maybe we can do a little bit of a program here. Maybe we can, you know, dangle that carrot in front of Naito fans again. Like, I think that would probably be a bad move. And I think just give the guy the roll call and have him win
WWE
the title.
WWE sicko mode.
Yeah, that would be pretty wild for Kano. But hey, he's done it before. But no, this, like, if you're not an LIJ fan, I don't know how you could be excited about this main event. I really don't. Like, it's unless you're, and I mean like a very, very big LIJ fan and really into the idea that, well, Naito's gonna do the roll call, okay, and that's good. If you're into that and you're gonna buy a ticket to go to Wrestle Kingdom to see Naito do the roll call, more power to you. I think that's gonna be great. It's gonna be a huge moment, an awesome moment, a very emotional moment for a lot of people. Cool. I am not saying that you shouldn't enjoy that or shouldn't like it, but for somebody on the outside looking in, or somebody that just doesn't really care that much about LIJ, I don't know how you can sell this to someone. Like, how do you tell somebody that, like you said, you know, not using the casual fan or whatever, but maybe someone that just jumps in and watches a couple new, they watch the G1 sometimes, they watch Wrestle Kingdom, like, what are you going to tell them to stay up for? You know, like, I don't know if there's a big hook to say, oh man, you got to be up, got to make sure you're awake to watch Sonata versus Naito at, you know, 4 a.m. or whatever your local time. It's a tough sell. And I think that's really what Wrestle Kingdom in general is, you know, you have Will Ospreay versus Jon Moxley, which I think would have been a great sell. And when that angle was happening, I was hooting and hollering going, oh man, Wrestle Kingdom is back, baby. And then David Finlay showed up. And then I was like, oh boy, oh no, this is not good. And the angle I think was good. And the way that they approached it was good. The problem was, is I don't know that anybody can be interested about a three-way dance between Ospreay, Moxley, and David Finlay. I mean, it's obvious probably who's taking what fall and who's going to be involved in the fall and all that sort of stuff. So,
I don't know. Who do you think?
The thing is, I guess we're complicated a little bit now that Ospreay is officially signed with AEW. Because for me before, it was like, oh, obviously, like, you know, Ospreay can take that fall. They probably don't want Moxley to take the fall. Ospreay can take the fall. Finlay can win because I think the title's going to move over to Finlay. Now I guess it's a little more up in the air because he is signed to AEW. I still think Finlay probably wins, and I think he probably beats Ospreay. I could see some situation where Moxley does the DDT and Finlay throws Ospreay out of the ring and then pins Moxley and some stuff like that. So maybe my obvious pick isn't as obvious anymore, but I still think that's the way I'm going. I can't foresee Moxley or Ospreay winning this.
No, I have no idea. I mean, Ash on our Discord is labeling this show the Tonio Dome. And there's all conspiracy theories about how Tony Khan is influencing the booking here.
There's a lot of stuff on this show because now I'm like, I'm sort of second guessing that because, yeah, Will is signed now. So do you want him taking falls? But now it's like, all right, now, okay. This guy can't take falls because he is going to be in your company in a little bit. Like, what are we doing here? Like, somebody's got to take a fall here. And I think Moxley probably... they'll try to protect a little bit more than Will. And I think Will is more than open to losing, obviously, a little bit more. And not that Moxley would care either, but...
I should point out that Mox has not taken a pin in New Japan since he joined AEW.
Wow. Okay. So, never mind. Man, is that true? Oh, wow. Okay. Huh.
The last time he was defeated in New Japan was against Juice Robinson in the G1 in 2019.
Oh, right. Yeah, because he hadn't technically signed there yet. Right. Okay. Huh, yeah, so I guess there's a first time for everything, but I don't know. Or Ospreay just hits, like, you know.
I can see them doing that as well.
David Finlay, having, I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah, United Empire being this sort of cross-promotional thing, and Ospreay's still the leader, and they're doing because he opened over there, and he's got the whatever this new championship is in AEW. I'm scared they're going to do that as well. So
yeah.
I don't want David Finlay being a featured push guy as a singles champion, but to me that's like the lesser of three evils here.
Yeah, it might be. Yeah, and that's – so again, I guess, like, you know, the intrigue, again, that we're talking about here isn't what the match is going to be. If it was Will versus Moxley, it's like, fuck, that's going to be a hell of a match or whatever. That's going to be something special to watch. That's a hook. The hook that we're talking about here, I don't know that I'm interested in the match itself, but I'm interested in who – the booking politics of who's going to win this or whatever, and I don't know if that's enough.
Yeah, that's not a nice, fun way of looking at Wrestle Kingdom, is it?
Right, exactly. Yeah, Wrestle Kingdom. Right? We're talking about Wrestle Kingdom being like, well, how is this going to affect AEW booking? No, that's not what it's supposed to be. That's not what we're supposed to do here. You know, that's not what this is for. It's Wrestle Kingdom in the Tokyo Dome. This is not what it's supposed to be at all. So I think that definitely hurts a little bit. And, you know, the Sonata Naito, like I mentioned there, if you're not into the roll call, I don't know how you could be that intrigued at that. Danielson and Okada, look, those are two of my favorite wrestlers ever. I think they had a good match, but not a great match at Wrestle Dream. I think they can do better. I think that'll be spectacular. I'm into that. No problem there. So my hook for Wrestle Kingdom, if I need anything, is Danielson versus Okada. I think that'll rock. And I assume that Okada will get the win. But, you know, who knows? Anything can happen with these guys. But,
that's a real pickle for Tony, isn't it? Because when Okada signs, I don't know if he's already signed with AEW, then, you know, Tony's got to have one of his guys lose that match.
right. So why is everything about AEW on this Wrestle Kingdom?
Time limit draw.
What are we doing here? Yeah, you know what? Why not? Yeah, let's do it. Let's do a time limit draw here. But that match has got me all. I'm all in on that match no matter what, just because those are two of my all-time favorites. So that's my hook. And I think that's kind of what's keeping me through Wrestle Kingdom more than anything. And the rest of the show was, I don't know, fine. You know, Sabre and Tanahashi, I feel like we've seen that 1,000 times. And I don't know that Tanahashi can still go to that level, but it's Zach and he's spectacular. So I think it'll be fine. And then Shingo versus Tama Tonga. I mean, God damn it. Sell me on this one, Joel. Please try. I would love to be sold on Tama Tonga versus Shingo Takagi because I can't get there.
I quite liked it a bit when they did it in October. I don't know why they're doing it again now. To me, this reeks of they had a plan but had to go back on it for some reason, because to me it seemed that there were all the signs pointing towards Shingo and Tsuji participating in the World Tag League.
Yes.
And it seemed like they did a 180 and it felt a bit like hotshot booking. So I don't believe that Tama Tonga versus Shingo was the original plan for that.
Which is a much better plan. And that, you know, you put that match on the show and my interest level on this show skyrockets, because that's like, that's going to be a hell of a match, and B, it has some real stakes to it. You know, Yota Tsuji beating Shingo to win the Never Open Weight title is a transformative.
No, sorry. I meant them entering World Tag League together. Oh, they were doing loads of tag stuff together, like doing tag moves together and talking about.
I see. Yeah. Yeah. Well, either way, it would have been fine for me. But no, absolutely. I think that I see what you're saying now. Yeah. That would be way better as well for those guys if they were in the mix here and doing that sort of stuff. But yeah, it's hard to, I can't get sold on a Tama Tonga Shingo. And I'm with you. I thought the match in October was good, but it was like, all right, that was good. Like, I felt like I was placated. I was good. I had my dessert and I was like, I am done. You slide the plate over the table and you're like, that's good. That is the best it's probably ever going to be. I think I'm good. And then they're just going to run it back here. And that is painful. Cause yeah, I can't get sold on a Tama Tonga thing.
Circling back to Okada, Owl says, what are the chances of Okada actually leaving?
I think better than I would have expected a couple of years ago. I do think that because the relationship is healthy enough that there might be a situation where you could do a kind of a dual thing where maybe it's every other month he's one place, or for the big shows he's in New Japan. I don't know. If I was betting, I would still bet that he just sticks with New Japan Pro Wrestling and that all this is just a leverage play to kind of say, hey guys, pony up this cash, or if you don't have cash, give me some equity stake, or give me something a little bit more to keep me here. Keep me here. I'm telling you I want to be here, but you need to kind of up the ante a little bit because I got this offer, I got this offer, I got this thing going. Like, that's what I'm assuming is the case. And that would still be my betting favorite, is that he's just trying to put a little bit of heat on New Japan Pro Wrestling. But hey, maybe that what turns around and what happens is AEW gives him this incredible offer, and very similar to what they said with Will Ospreay, where, hey, he can go work New Japan whatever he wants, and we're going to be hands off and all that sort of stuff. And it sounds good now, but you know, will that actually happen in practicality? We'll see. That would be fine, I guess, but that would be a real, real gut punch to New Japan Pro Wrestling if this guy is even splitting his time half with AEW, or at most is an AEW guy that can do New Japan sometimes. Like, that would be an absolute gigantic gut punch to New Japan Pro Wrestling, and it would maybe encourage them to build up that next group and get those next guys going, because you're gonna have to. But it would feel, it feel like the heart getting ripped out of that company, right? If Okada's got that graphic, you know, the Okada's All Elite graphic, like, that would just be a oh my God. Because I think then people would really start, because there's been whispers, and you've talked about it, of course, on the show, that like, financially, there's, you know, it's not the best of times for New Japan Pro Wrestling, and maybe, you know, competing for talent on a contract level is becoming more and more difficult and that sort of stuff. So Okada leaving to go to AEW would just be absolutely gigantic. And it'd be one of the biggest wrestling stories in Japanese wrestling history, because what other guy of that level left to go to America? You know what I mean? Like, it is never. You've had Tenryu leave All Japan to go to SWS. You've had, obviously, the Exodus and stuff like that from All Japan and little things like that. But, man, this would be an all-time,
Nakamura,
all-time thing.
He'd be the biggest up to this point?
Yeah, yeah.
But even that, that's not on the level of a Okada. And I can't dismiss this one outright. I know I've heard plenty of reasons why people think it's absurd because of, you know, the great position he's got. He's lined up to have an office job with Bushiroad in the future or whatever, and his wife's successful career, and they've got a child, blah, blah, blah. But I don't think I can say there is zero chance of it happening, because he's got to be looking at whatever money, I don't know, like Will Ospreay is making, and thinking, huh. And it would be foolish of him not to, as you guys would say, kick the tires. And right. I do wonder about the booking of Okada, because the whole first 6 months of the year and sort of writ large for New Japan, it seems like it's been booked by two different people from the first half of the year and the last half of the year. And we started off with this really compelling story about Okada taking on all the Zoomers and, you know, fighting against Kiyomiya and all the kids and all that. And that was great. But then he's just sort of quietly taken a back seat,
right,
with this the Never Six Mans and the Danielson stuff. And yeah, it does make me think, what is going on there?
No, it is. Yeah. And that's one of the things that I loved about the early part of 2023. And I forgot to mention that. And I have it, you know, my notes here of just saying, like, Okada's, year, and I think his year was started off awesome because I love the idea of grumpy ass. Okay, I got to go back and watch some of those matches. Those are some of the most fun I ever had. It's just grumpy ass veteran Okada, just so pissed about Kiyomiya, so pissed about all these young guys in his company and get off my lawn and stuff. That was awesome. I forget how great that stuff was in early 2023. But you're right, that it's another thing of us like limping into the end of the year where it's like Okada just feels like a complete non-factor in this company right now and doesn't feel like he's really involved in any of the top level stuff. Doesn't feel like he's involved in the main event mix. Doesn't feel like he's, you know, what's the next, what's his 2024 look like? What stories are being developed for his 2024? It feels like almost nothing. And that you're right. And it's, I don't know if there's, I think there's smoke. I don't know if there's a full blown fire yet, but there's smoke. I think there absolutely is smoke. And it's like, what was it? You know, 2016 or whatever, that he went to like the Royal Rumble or whatever, and everyone's like, oh no, and it was like, okay, that was a 0% chance. There was no chance in hell that dude was ever going to go to was it SummerSlam or Royal Rumble? Do you remember what I'm talking about, with where he went to America and went to some WWE show and they were like, oh, he's backstage, oh no, and I was like, everybody knew that. Yeah. No, he's just probably trying to just hang out with people. Like, there was no chance in hell that guy was going to leave at that time. But 2024, and for a lot of the reasons that you mentioned there, for some of the same reason that people say, oh, he's not going to go because he has a wife and a young child and a family and all that sort of stuff. It's like, well, maybe he looks at that money and goes, all right, well, I have a wife and a child, and this is a chance to make life-changing money.
They ain't cheap, I'll tell you that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You would know for sure. Like, maybe he's looking at that and going, all right, well, this can change our lives. And I don't have to be there forever. I don't have to do this forever. And maybe they're going to let me do Wrestle Kingdom and let me do this show and that show and that show. It'll probably undoubtedly be better on my body. Yeah, I mean, I could see it. You know, some people immediately say, well, no way, there's no way, there's no way, because of the family. And I think that might actually work in the opposite way, where, you know, that check gets slid in front of him and he goes, whew, okay, hold on a minute. And you're going to let me live in Japan and I can work in, do this and kind of run my own, you know, do my own rules and kind of come in when I need to and that sort of stuff. Like, if that check's big enough and he's got enough things built into that, it's not impossible. And that's why I'm with you. I don't think it's a 0% chance. Again, I would bet that he just sticks with New Japan, but I think there's certainly smoke to the fire more so than and WWE. I think WWE is a 0% chance, to me, honestly. I would be, the heart would be ripped out of me if that guy shows up in WWE. Like, that would stun me to a level that I've never, I mean, that would be a completely transformative way of how WWE acquires talent as well and who they try to acquire and that sort of stuff. That would absolutely blow me away. I think they think that they're in the mix, but I don't know that they're truly in the mix.
Now, you are probably marginally more favorably inclined towards AEW at this point. We know you've had your ups and downs in the company.
Don't tell the people who run the company that, because they would not agree with you, Joel, but go on, please.
Well, I was going to ask, well, what's your perception of the AEW New Japan relationship at the moment?
Very one-sided at this point. Very, very one-sided at this point. And there was times where it felt like a little bit of a push and pull and a little bit of a, you know, more collaborative relationship. It really feels like I don't know that New Japan is really getting much of anything out of it right now. I guess you get Moxley sometimes. Cool. You got Brian Danielson coming in for Wrestle Kingdom. All right, that's cool. But yeah, it feels very, very one-sided. Forbidden
Door's
a great show.
Gates of Agony. Gates of Agony.
Oh, right. Right. You're right. And they were fun. They were fun. So you know what? Yeah, right. Gates of Agony. Yeah, I don't know.
Oh, wait, that's ROH, isn't it? That doesn't count.
Oh, you're right. Oh. You're right. They are officially ROH. Because, yeah, didn't they get parentheses ROH next to their name?
Yes.
On the tournament? Okay, well, yeah, strike that from the record. We are wrong. All right, we're back to it being a bad relationship. But, no, it just feels like it's very one-sided at this point. And if I'm New Japan, I'm not sure what I'm really getting out of this anymore, and I'm not sure it's really worth kind of still pursuing it. Forbidden Door is great. I think that, you know, what you do maybe is you do the Forbidden Door, and yeah, a little bit, it's good to be on good terms, I think, but I don't know that I don't know that, like, relationship, it doesn't feel like a relationship anymore, really. It just feels like very one-sided, very, you know, hey, we want to send our talent to America, or our talent's coming to America, or our talent's, you know, because that seems to be the bigger thing, is that a lot of guys from New Japan have kind of an open door to AEW whenever they want to go. And if whatever they're in America or whenever they're doing a stopover or they're coming in for a New Japan Strong Show or whatever, they can go work AEW and that sort of stuff. And that's good. But I don't know. Yeah, again, like, I'm not sure that New Japan is getting that much out of this relationship at this point. And I think that's sort of, I don't know. Do you kind of agree as well? Like, it doesn't feel like a very symbiotic relationship right now. It just feels like AEW is glad to have them and they're glad to use some of their talent. But I don't know that New Japan's really getting much benefit of it anymore.
I know how these things work. I know how the politics work, the shit trickles downwards, and there's always that power imbalance where one side of the relationship ends up getting beaten like a drum, because Noah have been on the sharp end of that with the New Japan relationship. But I don't have any problem with New Japan guys losing to AEW guys. I don't have any problem with AEW signing New Japan guys. What I don't like is when they are fucking with New Japan booking and New Japan titles, which it feels like they are doing. I don't like being sort of strung along saying, you know, oh, well, this guy's signed for AEW, but he might come back. He's going to do some New Japan dates. Don't worry. And storylines and factions and stuff not getting clean endings and conclusive resolutions just because there is that relationship. And oh, they might come back at some point. That's what irritates me.
Yeah, it feels like New Japan is being forced to care a little bit more about AEW's, you know, emotions and booking and all that sort of stuff. But the same is not being when those New Japan guys come to AEW, it's just like, hey, here's Okada, here he is. And you know what I mean? Like, nothing that has to do with any of the stories, nothing that really has any meat to it. You know, Will largely just kind of, you know, after the Forbidden Door, just kind of like a dude that's like, oh yeah, Will Ospreay's there, okay, cool. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, yeah, it does. But then on the other side, New Japan has to be very adaptive to AEW's booking and very adaptive to what AEW wants to do and very adaptive to this and this. And I don't know that the benefits are great enough to really worry about that. You know, yeah, you have Danielson on Wrestle Kingdom and that's great and I like that, but it's not enough to, I think, you know, completely have to just, you know, succumb to this and just, you know, every time that they book your guys, they could just do whatever the hell they want with them. And when you book their guys, you have to be very careful and very precise about what you do and make sure you do it right and stuff. So that's a little troubling.
All right. Well, unless there's anything else from the Wrestle Kingdom cards, shall we move on to the main event, the World Tag League? Because that's what listeners are here for, to hear about. So we have our final set for, I believe it's Sunday. So the final of the World Tag League is going to be Bishamon, Yoshihashi, and Hiroki Goto against Guerrillas of Destiny. Are they still Guerrillas of Destiny? Guerrillas of Destiny 2? Hikuleo and El Phantasmo. How are we feeling about that as the final?
it's, you know what I mean? It's like, I don't... Here's the thing. Okay. I think Hikuleo is good now. Is that kind of the common? Is that the common thing that he's good now?
Welcome to my island.
Is it an island? I didn't know if it was an island or not.
There's very few of us. I felt like one of the lone Hikuleo defenders since the Jay White match. Actually, I thought Jay White did a tremendous job making Hikuleo look good, and they did a terrible job capitalizing on that because we didn't see him again until the G1. And then when he was in the G1, I thought he looked pretty good in that.
I would agree.
The younger guys, like Tsuji in particular, did a really tremendous job making him look good. And surprised that he made it out of the block and made it to the quarterfinals. And they got eliminated then. I mean, I don't think any complaints about him not going any further than that. But I don't think it's fair to complain that, oh, you know, we didn't capitalize on the Jay White thing. Oh, we're not doing anything with Hikuleo. And then also complain that he's made it to the World Tag League Final. To me, this is a good spot for him. This is a nice little push. He seems to have found his groove here. And we might be in the minority, but I also probably one of the few ELP apologists. I think he's done well in this spot as well. I think he's really connected with the crowds. The fans in Japan seem to love him. And he does a lot of pandering to the crowd, but they like that stuff. And I think whilst they may not be blowing the doors off in terms of star ratings, there's something about this Hikuleo ELP team, which I think is good. And, you know, if it's preventing us from having ELP in that never-ending Tama Tonga, David Finlay, never open weight title cycle of violence, then that is something to celebrate. So I am actually okay with Hikuleo and ELP being the final. There's other teams that maybe I would prefer to see there, but that's one I can't really moan about that one too much.
No, I definitely can't either. And he's the biggest thing with Hikuleo is he's fully understanding how to be a big guy. And that's what I've really kind of noticed. Like you mentioned the Jay White match through the G1. And I really noticed it in this match. And a lot of credit to TMDK too. And we're talking about the semifinal here with Nicholls and Haste. Nicholls and Haste made sure that guy looked like he was the biggest fucking monster in the world. I mean, every time he slammed them, they were taking these big giant bumps and jumping all over the ring and stuff. And he'd, you know, lift them up and they jump extra high or whatever. And it just made everything look so, so good. And this is like, that's what, you know, I think this is good for New Japan to have a guy like this. And that was always kind of the problem with Hikuleo. It was like, be big, you're a giant, be big, work big. You know, you don't have to pretend to be like athletic. You don't have to pretend to be, just be a monster. You know what I mean? Be a monster. And if you throw in the athleticism, that will be great. That's like classic, you know, WCW Giant stuff, where it was like very early on in the Giant's career, he was doing moonsaults and doing all that sort of stuff. And it's like, hold on a minute. Like, why don't be a big man first and then surprise people with the moonsaults. Don't go with the moonsaults right away. Work on being a big guy first. And I think that's finally what Hikuleo, it's finally worked after a long time. Because I used to see this guy live, you know, when he was in America touring and stuff. And I'd see him and I'd always have the same complaint. Like, work big. Be a monster. You're huge. Use that. You know, make that part of your thing. And he has definitely done that. And I think being in a team with El Fantasmo helps that as well, because you have Fantasmo, who's obviously smaller, and then they do the big spots where, you know, they'll do a cool move and Fantasmo will go to give him the high five or whatever, and Fantasmo's got to jump real high to get him, and it's like, yeah, this guy's huge. Like, there's ways to kind of trick it to make the fans think, wow, this guy's even bigger than I thought he was, and Fantasmo does a good job of emphasizing that. Hikuleo's now working to that, and I thought in this match in particular, TMDK did a great job of making him look like a big man. So I have no complaints about the Fantasmo Hikuleo. That is fine with me. No issues. I think there's, like you said, there's probably a few better teams in the World Tag League that could have went through, but like, I didn't want TMDK, honestly. I'm much more happy with Fantasmo and Hikuleo getting that push. And, you know, if I can't come on here and complain about the same people and the same teams and the same stuff all the time, and then be like, ah, yeah, I didn't want Girls, because this is a new-ish, you know, there's been a lot of Bishamon versus Gorillas of Destiny, but never this Gorillas of Destiny, never this Fantasmo Hikuleo thing. So I'm fine with them moving forward. And I think it's a pretty fun team. And I'm an ELP guy too. So I guess is that an even smaller island? There's a few more people on that island though, right? I think there's a couple.
No, probably even fewer.
There's less. It seems like most I'm really lost. I don't know what people do. I've lost I don't know the tenor of current New Japan fans. Okay, well, you know what? I don't really like people anyway, and I like islands to myself. You know, a beach to yourself, there's nothing better. So you know what? I'm more than happy. You and I sitting on that beach, drinking drinks, enjoying the weather, and enjoying El Fantasma and Hikuleo. That's fine. I'll be on the island with you. That's no problem. So yeah, I'm fine with those guys. I have no problem there. The flip side, Bishamon. I mean, I know why they're there, and obviously you need Bishamon, and I like Bishamon, but I kind of wish maybe they went a little more fun with this and tried to put a different team here. I know, I understand, I get it, but in a year where it's like, let's start working towards something new and new things and new people, I feel like the Bullet Club War Dogs would have been a fun one, but then Gorillas of Destiny versus Bullet Club War Dogs, am I into that? It's kind of a monkey paw situation in terms of this, so I don't know. With the semifinals, the way they were set up, I guess the final that we got is fine. Like that's probably the best way to book both these matches. But I do think that there was maybe some different teams that could have moved up to this spot instead of Bishamon that really could have, you know, like you said a little bit earlier, like a Shingo and Yotsusugi team. That would have been really cool and exciting for the tag division. Bishamon going back and doing it again. That's, you know, I like him, but it feels samey on a Wrestle Kingdom card that already feels very samey and a company that feels very samey right now as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's a safe pick, isn't it? I feel that this is sort of them throwing Bishamon a bone, and maybe they don't want to have an all foreigners final. You know, I get that. And
right.
Maybe there's a bit of a disconnect between us as Western fans. I mean, I really like Bishamon, but they've not done anything particularly thrilling lately. And, you know, Goto's been holding some injuries. So, yeah, it's not lighting my world on fire, but I understand why they've done it. So it's not the sexiest final, but it's one that I'm not as up in arms about as other people. Like you said, there's other teams I would have rather had there, but it's okay. But what the bigger question marks for me is, who wins and what's next? So Booze says, are you looking forward to FTR coming out to challenge when Bishamon wins? So there's a lot of directions this could go, Rich. Could you rank the Wrestle Kingdom possibilities in order of psychic damage caused? So we either have Hikuleo and ELP winning World Tag League, leading to a rematch, Bishamon versus GOD again, we get some sort of four-way or three-way schmoz with War Dogs and TMDK inserted into the mix, or Bishamon win World Tag League and then choose their challengers, choosing possibly an AEW team, maybe Aussie Open. You know, they never technically lost those titles. Maybe FTR again, maybe even the Young Bucks. What do you think?
I don't like any of those. Is there a D? Can I choose D? ELP versus, and Hikuleo versus GOD. No, thank you. No. That is far and away my least favorite of those. The four way, I'm naturally inclined to not enjoy, you know, four way matches, and especially, you know, New Japan, you know, we used to go to that well a lot for Wrestle Kingdom, a lot of times with the juniors or whatever. So that, I guess that one would be number two for me, I suppose. And number one, I guess, but I don't love it, is Bishamon versus an AEW team of the Young Bucks, Aussie Open, or FTR. But it also speaks to what you were talking about a little bit earlier. It's like, how much of this show is going to be like AEW centric and related to AEW and about AEW and with AEW? Because like, that feels like another one. But I would be more interested in Bishamon versus the Bucks or Bishamon versus FTR than I would ELP and Hikuleo versus, you know, GOD, and then the four-way schmoz thing. I can't get excited about the four-way schmoz. I just can't get there. But certainly more excited than the God versus God match. I that is so far down the list.
I said the immediate rematch, because obviously Bishamon are the tag champions at the moment. So if ELP and Hikuleo beat them, then presumably they'd be facing them again.
Got it. Okay, sorry. I thought you were saying rematch. Like we're getting like the original GOD versus the this GOD.
Oh yeah, Tama Tonga pulling double duty at the Dome.
Yeah, right. Oh yeah, no, he's in the shingle match. I was like, what are you talking? Okay, now in double all mix. Oh God, that's the most horrific timeline right there. You know, you got to hear that song twice. You know, in an echoey Tokyo Dome. Okay, no, I see. No, so no, we got no, immediate no, rematch. As he's crawling down. It's like, we just saw you crawl. Just get in the ring. You just crawled 10 minutes ago. Just go in. Go in the ring. Okay. Now I can adjust my list a little bit. Okay. Thank you for clarifying. And I'm sorry for been a long day. Four-way, that's the last. That's the least of the I'm putting the immediate rematch number two. I'm still Bishamon versus FTR, Young Bucks, Aussie Open. I'm still putting that number one, I think. But I don't love any of those. I would rather choose D. And I don't know what D is, but I think I would rather choose D.
The only option out of those I've mentioned that I find deeply offensive and disgusting would be Aussie Open. There's just something about that would not sit right with me. Yeah. I would.
Now
really
we're ready to
that.
Come back. Hey, can we wrestle here? And it's yes. Like, well, yeah, you could, but you left.
Yeah, okay. Just take a big old shit on the regular working roster of heavyweight tag teams who've been working really hard this year, but nah.
Is he ready to come back?
I don't know.
I don't know what his current status is. Yeah, I guess that's a good question. I don't know. I don't actually know where he's at.
But the fact that Aussie Open had to vacate those titles and have that win over Bishamon, and I think Bishamon have hinted at wanting to even the score with them, that's the ghost at the feast for me. So, again, I'm watching this World Tag League final with curiosity towards booking rather than excitement about who the tag champions are.
Right. Yeah, a lot of the discussion about Wrestle Kingdom will be around like booking around relationships, and yeah, that's just, it's hard to get super excited about that.
Okay, did you watch the semifinals in the English language audio?
Joel, I did not. I kept clicking that little gear, and I kept asking me what speed I want to watch, and I said, brothers, I want to watch this in one, but can I get something else? Can I get some different languages? And then I clicked the audio button, and that just went to mute, and then I refreshed, and I... Gosh darn it, I guess I can't figure out how to switch to the English language on this new fangled New Japan world. I guess I'm just an old man, because no, Joel, I couldn't figure out how to get the English language going on this morning's show. So
it's weird, isn't it? Because I'm sure Walker Stewart, the English language commentator who works for, is it an employee? I assume is an employee, a salaried employee of New Japan Pro Wrestling, said that he'd recorded English audio for all these shows, but it's nowhere to be seen. It must have got lost in the
so you couldn't find it either? Weird.
No, it's bizarre. How are you finding this new Japan world?
It's fine. You know what I mean? Like, there's some parts that I like about it. I think it looks better, like aesthetically it looks better. It's easier to find the current shows that I want to watch. You know, that's been no problem whatsoever. On the Fire Stick, it's pretty good. Like it's definitely better on the Fire Stick than it was before. I had the issue that a lot of people had where I watched it on a browser. This is my first time actually watching it on a browser this morning when I was watching these World Tag Leagues, and the quality was fucking awful and like really, really bad. Like video quality was horrific. Now it worked fine. It loaded fine and everything was good, but like it just could never get good quality video. And I was like, all right, well, maybe it's my connection. Then I watched something else from another, you know, competing streaming service and it looked perfect. And I was like, okay, well then it's just that. And that's been kind of a thing, right? That the desktop version has been giving people, has it been low quality or just like hasn't been working for people? Cause
it's been a fucking disaster for me. I use Firefox as my browser. Can't get it to work on that.
I'm using Chrome and it, like, I was able to get to the show, but it, like, I'm telling you, it was the worst quality. It was like Nico 2013 quality. And I'm like, what the fuck is going on here? And I kept doing, I reset it. I logged out. I logged back in. I thought, oh, maybe there's a setting to change what video quality I want. And I said, you know what? I don't need 240p. I got a decent connection here. We can bump this thing up a little bit if we want. But, I mean, it worked fine. It played, but yeah, it didn't look very good. I'm mixed on it. I don't think there's a. I was told this is going to be a monumental change and completely different and stuff. And like aesthetically, it's a little bit better and it's a little bit easier to find things. But I can't say that I love it. I think it's maybe a lateral move. And it seems like for some people that it's working less than it was before. So for them, it's probably a negative move. So I'm kind of indifferent to it.
Yeah, what is frustrating me is, I don't know if I'm doing something wrong, but all the shows being broken up into matches, I can't just hit an option to say, play
I think
the whole
that's
show.
The thing now. I think that's what they do. And it's, you know, in one breath, that's good. If you're just trying to like, if you're a fan, that's just trying to say, hey, I just want to watch this match, or I'm just interested in this. Like say you're going to watch the Tokyo Dome and you're like, oh, Bryan Danielson and Okada. Okay, cool. Click, 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 click. You can go right to it. But for people that actually want to watch the whole show, it's a little funky. It is a little weird.
Well, okay. So we touched on TMDK a bit. I like them and I appreciate their effort, but I don't feel that they had the standout match in this World Tag League for me to say, yes, they deserve to be in the Wrestle Kingdom match. They deserve to have the titles. They've not quite grabbed the ball by the horns for my liking. War Dog's still my favorite. I know you guys seem to be a bit cooler on them than me, but I feel they are the most exciting team. I think Coughlin is still a fair bit behind Gabe Kidd, because obviously Gabe Kidd's been wrestling a lot longer than Alex Coughlin has. But to me, Gabe Kidd is just the guy. He's the guy that I think should be leading Bullet Club now, if not now, in the future.
Yeah.
To me, he's got it all. Love watching him. Where are you on War Dogs?
No, I like the idea of the War Dogs more than I kind of like what the output is, if that makes sense. Like, I'm always kind of like, hell yeah, look at these guys. And then the matches themselves, I'm indifferent to them. Like, sometimes they land, and when they land, you're like, these guys are the best. This is the best gimmick going in New Japan. This is so good. But then sometimes it's, you know, I'm like, yeah, I don't know. It sometimes it feels a little long in the tooth sometimes, the gimmick and the way they're approaching things. But no, I completely forgot to mention these guys as well in the opening of the show when I was talking about the young guys moving up. These are two more guys that it's like, yeah, now you have these also Gaijin dudes that you can move up the ladder and move up and have them do new things. Gabe Kidd, I think he should be looked upon as a 2024 guy to get to a certain level and get him being in main events, being a contender for titles, going for, you know, being a big, not just the tag division, not just, you know, the fourth or fifth guy in his unit or whatever, but like you said, leading the unit, breaking free of the unit, doing whatever. This guy needs to be that in 2024. And I think Coughlin's not that far behind him. And you know, there's several guys that I forgot to mention at the top. I just went with the, you know, kind of the musketeers, the guys, you know, the actual, you know, Japanese dudes that they're moving up and, you know, those sort of guys and Oiwa and whatnot. But no, I think those guys too need to start, you know, the guys just need to start moving up the ladder a little bit too. It'll be really good. But no, I again, like, I like the idea of them a little bit more than I like the output of them, but I still see a ton of potential, and I think that those guys are on the right path. Those guys are absolutely, absolutely, absolutely on the right path. And there's no reason that TMDK should have been in this Wrestle Kingdom match, and that's one of the reasons why that four-way, I'm not really that interested in them. To me, Wrestle Kingdom, I think a lot of the other rest of this card should be featuring young guys in big spots where they can get big wins and really set the stage for 2024.
We touched earlier on Ren Narita, who obviously has joined House of Torture to the chagrin of a lot of fans who bizarrely seem to think that Ren was on the path to superstardom in his current Diet Shibata gimmick, which I would question and challenge. But I actually really like the execution of the angle. A bit rushed. I mean, I would have liked to have seen a bit more juice on the Ren and Shota team, who I thought were going to win the whole of World Tag League. And it's just extremely funny that they committed to doing that long fireside chat interview thing before the tournament, where there's all, you know, the basic, well, no, not basic, they were literally flirting with each other, and then having that end up, the end goal of that being a House of Torture swerve. So, to me, Rez looking a lot more comfortable, dare I say, as the smirking asshole, if he's just going to go straight into sort of Dick Togo style cheating interference spots, which I don't have any evidence to the contrary, then yeah, jury's out in terms of the sort of work rate, the stars output of House of Torture Ren Narita. But at least they tried something, because I don't think the current gimmick and the current trajectory he was on was that promising.
No, I kind of agree. And he's one of the guys that he's definitely third of the you know, the new Musketeers now. And that was clear at the time. And it's becoming more and more clear as time's going on or whatever, that he's, you know, not quite there in terms of where these other guys are. And I don't want to discount it offhand, because like I think he needed something. He absolutely needed something. And like you said, it's working so far. He is pretty good at being a smug asshole. He's pretty good at it so far. The turn was good. The angle was good. I think all of it was solid. My worry is that it's a House of Torture, and that I'm worried that he is just going to become another show. And it's just like, oh boy, I don't know that I need, that would not be the right trajectory for him. Now, if you want to say that he's joining the House of Torture and maybe very quickly he emerges as one of the, you know, a guy that could maybe upset Evil and get him out of the, you know, like that sort of, if you want to do that sort of story with him, where he's kind of this young hotshot that maybe now thinks that he should run this unit, or that he should be in the top of the unit, or where he's going to kind of have that sort of, you know, intrigue, I'm in. And I think that's probably, and you don't have to do that immediately. You don't have to rush that, but I think he can be in there and he can maybe be, you know, push back on some of the stuff and maybe push back a little bit on Evil and maybe, you know, not follow all the, you know, the edicts and follow all the rules or whatever. And you could sort of play that up a little bit. I think that I'm all in on that, but yeah, if he just becomes, you know, distract the referee so Dick Togo can do a garrote wire thing, that will seem like a bit of a waste for him. And I don't know if there's any upward trajectory then for that. It would feel, because very much like show, it feels like, all right, you know what? We don't know what else we're going to do with this guy. This guy's never going to get any better or any, whatever. You know what? This is what his gimmick is now, and that's fine. And that's fine for show. That's fine. But I still have a little bit more hope for Ren Narita. So I am a little worried if he just becomes distraction garrote wire guy. That would worry me, that they don't think that this guy has anything.
Yeah. I mean, the execution of it, I think, was really quite great, because they, Shota and Ren got eliminated on like night 11 or something on a show that no one was really watching. So it was really bizarre. And everyone was like, what the fuck are they doing? And then the next match, they had Ren just refusing to engage with the match. And he just sat on the outside in a chair watching Shota get beaten up and try and wrestle the match again. I think it was against Evil and Yujiro single-handedly. And then it's like, you could sort of view it through the lens of, okay, Ren is waiting to see whether Shota is worthy of it, because he fucked up in the last match and didn't tag in Ren. Maybe he's waiting to see, you know, can Shota pull this off by himself? Can he prove himself as a worthy partner for Ren to jump in and support him? And Shota's fighting them off single-handedly, and, you know, he's almost got the win, fighting, you know, two against one, and then Ren just comes in and I think he hit him over the head with the chair or something. So I thought the pacing and the execution of it was quite good.
I agree. Yeah, New Japan does just turns probably better than any other company on earth. Like, they always, almost every one of their turns is like, makes sense, logical, and it also both surprises you, but it also, you kind of get a light bulb moment too. Like, oh yeah, okay, this actually
does. It's always a bit of misdirection, isn't it?
Right.
So that was that. We touched on the Musketeers and just the youth in general. Like, what do you think guys like Shota and Ren and Tsuji and Uemura will be doing at Wrestle Kingdom?
It's a great question. I hope not the Rambo. If they're doing the Rambo, I'm that's booking malpractice. Honestly, if they're in the Rumble, they need to be doing something else. They need to do something more. But this card's filling up, man. This card is filling up very, very quickly. And if they're not in the tag match for the tag titles, they're obviously not in the junior tag title match. They're not for the Never. They're not for the World TV title. The World TV title would have been a great opportunity. I was told that this was a title for young hotshot wrestlers, right? Wasn't that what our gimmick was? Were we told that that's what this thing was? And now it's Zack Sabre Jr. versus Tanahashi. Okay. They're obviously not in the US heavyweight title mix. They're not in the junior heavyweight title mix. They're not in the world heavyweight title mix. So it's like, I don't know. We're kind of filling up here. So I guess you could do Ren versus Shota, but like, I don't, that doesn't feel very, to me, like Wrestle Kingdoms, they don't tend to do those sort of matches on there where it's just, you know, here's a singles match between two guys that, you know, I think that they might think that they can save that for another show and save it for a bigger event or something where they can maybe get more of a highlight, not be the eighth match on the card or whatever. So I don't know. I'm really looking at this card feeling like we're quickly filling up, and I don't see a spot for any of these guys. And I'm very worried that they're going to be in some rumble or some random multi-person tag match or whatever. But these guys are all in kind of different units and doing different things. So I don't even know how you stuff them into anything really at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I will say this, that it seems like there's a very sort of intentional choice to position each of those young guys in a different faction. So you got Shota in Hontai, you got Ren in House of Torture, Tsuji in LIJ, what else have we got? Yuya in Just Five Guys, even looking at, what's his name, Kosei Fujita in TMDK.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if we want to extend that to Gabe Kidd being in Bullet Club, but yeah, they've definitely deliberately split them into separate factions, hopefully with a view to the future. But I mean, at the moment, there's eight matches announced for Wrestle Kingdom, including the IWGP Heavyweight Tag Team Championships. And you'd expect for Wrestle Kingdom, how many matches were on the card?
Yeah, so I'm looking at last year's card right now. There was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 of the actual. There was 3 pre-show matches, obviously, the Rumble and then the exhibition match and then just a random six-man. But yeah, there was no, but every single one of those had a title involved in it, except for Tanahashi, Muto, and Umino versus LIJ or whatever, which obviously you had the Muto hook with that. And then obviously you had the IWGP women's title match on that show as well. So
one spot left.
Right. That's what I'm saying. It's like, you know, I don't see that many spots that are on the main show for these guys. And even then, there's not a good way to lump them all together unless you just do a match where they're all facing each other. You know what I mean? But I don't think we're not ready for that. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know that that's, and I don't know that that's clean to do either. Do you do it as a four way? Do you do it as like a five way or whatever? If you're extending
four way, the D'Artagnan Invitational. To see who's right. going to be the best musketeer.
Yeah, so like I don't think that these guys are on the show, or if they're on the show, they're in a pre-show match. And even then, I don't think it's, they tend to like to do kind of the older guys. Like last year you had the pre-show, you had the Fujinami and Tiger Mask, and then you had the, you know, the exhibition match, and then you had the Rumble. So I don't know where they fit. I really don't. And it does not feel like there is a natural fit for them. And that is tremendously disappointing, you know, given what it's not just like, because some people look at Wrestle Kingdom as like the beginning of the new year, and some people look at it at the conclusion of the prior year or whatever. I've always kind of looked at it as the conclusion of the prior year, more so than the beginning of the new year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think that's probably the way that they've booked it, you know, traditionally over the last couple of years. And to me, though, those guys have earned that spot over the year. I think Shota Umino has earned a spot on Wrestle Kingdom over this year. I think Yota Tsuji has earned a spot over the year, maybe less so Yuya and less so, you know, you can, you know, there's less, you know, Oiwa obviously probably has not earned a spot or whatever, but like for Shota and Tsuji, it's like those guys have earned a spot. I think Yuya Uemura is another one that I'm like, I don't know if he earned a spot on Wrestle Kingdom, but those two guys did. They had great years. They had really important years. And for them to just kind of end it with maybe you're in a six man, but it doesn't even work for I don't even know how you book them in a six man, given that they're all in different units. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know what you do here.
Yeah,
I think they're in the Rumble.
I mean, there's been speculation, like you mentioned as well, like a Ren versus Shota singles match, but that feels unearned and un-Wrestle Kingdom-y.
Right. Well, and they haven't done that in Wrestle Kingdom in a while, just have guy versus guy. And then also, like, wouldn't that feel, I don't know, I don't know that I would really want that on that show, because it's like, it's going to be eighth from the top and it'll be 9 minutes. Like, I don't know. That match feels like it needs a little bit more than that, right? Given how cool the turn was.
Yeah, I'm not sure how much you're gaining by making these guys face each other. To me, this card should have been, a good chunk of it should have been these young stars against the stars of today or the stars of yesterday, you know, having that symbolic passing of the torch moment. Right. So as I said, having those the casual Tokyo Dome viewers coming in saying, oh, okay, so these are the next guys, these are the big stars, which we're not getting to bring the discussion full circle.
Yeah, it feels like a little bit of a missed opportunity. And yeah, now kind of plotting that out and talking about it, it's like, yeah, we're going to have a Wrestle Kingdom and Shota Umino, who main evented and had arguably the best match in the entire company's year in 2023, will not be on the main show and will maybe be in a Rumble, or at worst will be or maybe at best will be in a six man or something like that. And Yota Tsuji, who was a sensation and had a great, great main event and really felt like a complete, you know, breath of fresh air to the company, will also just be kind of somewhere and something and not doing anything of importance. That feels like a huge miss to me. It really does, particularly with those two guys. A huge, huge miss.
Last question here. Multiverse A says, who are you most impressed with during World Tag League and outside of the regulars? Who would you like to see come back for another tour? So, yeah, we had visitors here. We had the CMLL team of Atlantis Jr., yeah. Sobrano Jr., Gates of Agony, Monster Source. I thought they were fantastic. Really tremendous, really connected with the crowd. I would love to see them back. And they got a fairly strong run, but I would definitely be looking to bring them in as a more semi-permanent fixture in the tag division because they were great. Obviously, we had Kaito Kiyomiya, and he is... been exchanging angry, funny faces with Kazuchika Okada. I don't know if that is building to anything. Probably not. But yeah, how have you felt about the visitors in this World Tag League?
Yeah, so the people that I need back is I need Jack Bonds and Bad Luck Fale. I need the Royal Grind. No, I'm kidding.
Jack Bonds was all right.
He was
a lot of pins. He was bottom of my power rankings.
Fine. Yes, he was fine. The CMLL team, obviously, if you could... anytime you could bring those guys back, I would go for it. But I have the exact same answer that you have of a team that you can use and a team that you could use and a team that you should use. And that's Monster Sauce. I love that team. Very similar to the, you know, Hikuleo and LP team. I love the small guy, big guy team. Archer feels like he belongs here. He just belongs in New Japan. He's just so much better in New Japan than he is anywhere else. And Alex Zane kind of getting that confidence, getting a character, getting sort of persona over, getting over with the crowds. I love Monster Sauce. So I would say, you know, both those guys, I don't see anything else for them to really do in the world of wrestling right now. So it's like, yeah, keep those guys and you know, if you can get something worked out with AEW where you take Lance Archer and you say, hey, we're just gonna keep him. Is that okay? You can pay him, but we'll keep him, or hey, we'll help you with the pay or whatever it is, or hey, just release him so we can sign him.
Just don't give him back. They won't notice.
Yeah, right. Like how long would it take until
hey, where's Lance?
Right. they'd be in Texas and they'd look around and say, oh God, we need Archer to do a squash match. Where is he? And then they look around, they wouldn't find him, and they would just go, ah, whatever. Okay, move on. And then he'll never think about him again. They'll think about him that night when they're in Garland, Texas, and want him to do his annual squash match in Texas. But then, yeah, they'll never notice. So just don't buy him keep him here. Don't buy him a return ticket and just keep, because I love Monster Sauce. And I think that is a team that has some legs and could be a lot of fun in this heavyweight tag division for sure.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Rich, for jumping on. Really appreciate your time. Anything you would like to plug before we get out of here?
No, obviously, you know, thank you for having me on here. It's long overdue, and hopefully I didn't ramble too much. I got a few things wrong here along the way, but it was a long day. I know you've had a long day as well. You're staying up late to accommodate me here, so I do appreciate that. But no, thank you for having me on, and you guys do an incredible job. You're just an incredible, incredible addition to the Voice Wrestling Podcast Network, a show that just has... In some way, what's really cool about it is it's like a completely your own audience, which I think is awesome. Like some people... might say, oh, all the people that like the JCast hate the flagship. Doesn't that make you mad? And I'm like, no, I love that. That's great that a whole different audience can listen to a show on our network and not necessarily need to watch and listen to everything else we do and just, you know, has a show that they love, that they enjoy. They enjoy the hosts for now, I guess, until you start. Now, if you keep saying bad stuff about New Japan, they might turn on you too. But no, it's you guys do a tremendous job with the Super JCast. So more than anything, just, you know, thank you. For everything that you guys have done over the years with the JCast, and given where it looked like, you know, the Pearlcast was going to go, and it was like, oh man, we're going to lose this thing that I think is super important for you guys to kind of take, you know, you especially taking over, and you and Damon just being a perfect duo to get the JCast to where it is has been phenomenal. So yeah, thank you obviously for you guys, but yeah, voiceofwrestling.com. Columns, reviews, previews, all that sort of stuff. If you want to hear more from me, I am on the flagship podcast on the Voice of Wrestling Podcast Network. We talk about everything. Talk about all of Japanese wrestling, all of American wrestling, Mexico, Europe, all of it. We cover as much of it as we can. Every promotion that, whatever promotions are kind of working for us at this time or has a big news story going on, we'll talk about that on the flagship. So we do that. And if you want even more from me, we have a Patreon as well, flagshippatreon.com, or you can go to voicesofwrestling.com. /Patreon to listen to that. And that's a bunch of bonus audio we do, bonus written content, weekly AEW reviews. I'm doing a series right now on the 30-year anniversary of the Bret Hart versus Owen Hart feud. So that is up now at flagshippatreon.com. So yeah, if you want bonus audio, that is how you can do it. But yeah, thank you again, Joel, for having me on here. I really do appreciate it. And yeah, I'm excited to see what the next year holds for New Japan Pro Wrestling.
Great. Thank you so much, Rich. So redcircle.com/shows/super-j-cast. If you want to throw a few bucks our way, we always appreciate the tips. At Cobra Kawaii and prowrestlingtees.com/superjcast for our t-shirts. Big thank you to Editor Dan, who you can find on Twitter at LousyHero219. You can follow us on Twitter at the Super JCast. Esther, do you mind having a coughing fit while I'm trying
to unbelievable.
This is come the on, best part of the show.
Come on.
Ruined it. Jesus Christ.
Unbelievable. Kids these days. It's unbelievable.
Oh, dear. Thank you, everybody. Still going.
This is so good.
Fucking troll job back here. Thank you, everybody, for listening, and goodbye.
You want me to do the outro? I'll do it. Because it seems when you talk, the cough starts. So I'll do. No, you got it. You got it. We're good. We're good.
Hey, kids, do you like wrestling? Well, we like wrestling, too. We are Shake Them Ropes here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Myself and Chris Novembrino kind of doing a lazy river of wrestling criticism, going through the news and whatever happened in stateside television wrestling. And also, you know what? Sometimes we just like to watch old stuff and talk about that, too. Love for you to give us a listen if you haven't already. We are Shake Them Ropes here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network.